Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos. Hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karub, guten tag, ciao, we viva, cat bang, half a day, chai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical kill, vivisection prison, killitary industrial corporation, in the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Sam Manella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Welcome to the most progressive program of all, identifying, you know, the place where it is most important to progress, you know, or we are doomed. If we don't progress to a vegan world, if you don't progress to being a vegan, we're doomed. I wish that my friends in progressive media would join me in this message, but they're too busy eating cheese sandwiches to really care about saving the world. We join together to complain about oil companies and coal and future pipelines. Let's complain about what somebody else is doing. Let's point our fingers, you know. But what? Give up my meat, huh? Give up my dairy, fish, and eggs? Now, I'm not so sure that the planet is worth saving if that's what I have to do. Bill McKibben can't overcome his addiction to eating animals. So to rationalize, he embraces absurd concepts like sustainable meat. And then he shirks his responsibilities to the truth, you know. The truth is, animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change, responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. Bill McKibben tells us that the World Bank study that gives us those figures has been discredited, but he won't say by whom. Is there anyone more dangerous to the environment than this 350.org fraud who tells us, sings songs, about something being wrong, climate change, and then we campaign for divestiture of investments in oil companies as a strategy, right? I told you so. Campaigning for divestiture, as opposed to campaigning for everybody going vegan, is really a waste of time. I told you so, as if the all-powerful oil companies who own the planet were suddenly going to be frightened into producing an alternative energy infrastructure, right? As if the planet has enough time for that, which would take at least 20 years to develop here in the USA. As if these companies and the U.S. government are willing to budget the necessary $35 trillion to do so. But we sing McKibben's tune, and he's all over democracy now with his divestiture scam. Now, when I told you so, that it would be amount to nothing, that it wouldn't work because, these all-powerful oil companies would just raise the price of a gallon of gas by 50 cents, and all the environmentalists would pay it, to get to the next 350.org sing-along. I just misunderstood the strategy, basically. Instead of raising oil prices to neutralize the divestiture movement, the fossil fuel industry instead just outright bought this past election. And, you know, their puppet, Barack Obama, has done his job well. You know, I mean, his betrayal of the people who elected him believing that they were getting something else, meant a disappointed electorate and nobody really interested in voting last Tuesday except, to get the vote out for the fossil fuel industry, and which basically won the election and now is freely appointing all of its puppets to all the key environmental positions. You know, so divestiture as an effective environmental policy, anyone, huh? Except for you, Bill McKibben, and of course, Amy Goodman. I mean, you know, as good as democracy now can be at times, on some issues, the program becomes mockracy now. You know, I mean, if you were watching just this past week, democracy now basically made the show into a commercial for the corporation Ben and Jerry's. It interviewed its owner, Ben, about GMOs. And of course, Amy Goodman and Ben were snickering at the company's Food Fight Fudge Brownie flavor, which Democracy Now! Was helping to market there, all the while ignoring that Ben and Jerry's carcinogenic products cause climate change, squander resources, and waste water, and cause immense suffering and death for countless raped mother cows and their babies. And, you know, the dude, Ben, doesn't even say he's against GMOs, which apparently don't bother him enough to leave them out of his ice cream. You know, his ice cream's had GMOs in it, and he won't answer the question whether he thinks GMOs are harmful to the environment or harmful to health. He says he's not a scientist. So why have him on the show? I mean, if he really wants to be honest, Amy should have him back to promote, you know, a new flavor like red cherry, bloody beheaded bovine brownie parfait, you know? But again, don't expect solutions from the media, the supposed liberal media, and, you know, it's wide range, you know, from the ABC, NNBC, BSP, BS, Fox censorship channel, to the so-called progressive media, you know, so self-righteous thinking, they think they are, you know, so self-righteous in their thinking. They think they are the moral compass, the progressive media, so opposed to oppression. But let's not forget, you know, how easy it is to see when we are the oppressed and so blind when we are the oppressor. I'm sure that progressive media mogul Tom Hartman feels no guilt as an oppressor when he brings dairy to his lips. He's probably even given lip service to the cause against rape on his program, choosing to ignore that he is sipping it. Anyway, I don't listen to his program anymore since he constantly supports animal exploitation and abuse with his Goats for the Old Goat promotion. I don't listen to Mike Malloy either. So much for progressives. You know, Mike Malloy telling us on his program that for fun he goes to the city dump and he shoots rats for fun. These are my progressive brothers and sisters who who were on Air America as I was on Air America. Apparently, I was the most progressive radio program on Air America. And, again, it seems to me that the battle should not be against fossil fuels, it should be against fossil foods, really. I mean, and, you know, I think Bill McKibben thinks every time we sing the song, it's a victory for 350.org, or anytime somebody divests, you know, it's a victory for 350.org. But it's no victory. Well, it's a victory in getting donations. Actually, every time somebody goes vegan, that's a victory for the environment. If anybody pays attention, you actually can figure this out, along with that World Watch report that I mentioned. The information is actually out there if anybody's interested, but I mean, you don't really hear about it that much from even those groups who are supposed to be on the side of animals. When you have that kind of information that animal agriculture is responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. By the way, looks like we're having technical difficulties today in reaching both of the guests who would be on this show. They're both in Asia, and we're not going to be able to have them on the program today. So I guess my only guest will be Professor Gary Francione next hour. And this hour, I suppose you can be a guest if you'd like to be. We have a listener call-in line, which is 855-660-4261, 855-660-4261. And you know how Tom Hartman says that, you know, the people go right to the front of the line, people who want to argue with him, who have an opposing viewpoint. The people who go right to the front of our line will be the people who love this program and love what I do. Okay, so those are the people, you know, if you're complimentary, and yes, those will be the people that will go right to the front of the line. This information's, I don't know, it's funny, when we had Austin Aries on this program some months back, you know, the wrestling star, he's called the greatest man who ever lived, and he called me the greatest broadcaster who ever lived. I mean, you look at the meaty, and nobody's talking about what we're talking about here. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Hey, join us at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can register right now at worldvegansummit.com and donate to Go Vegan Radio at goveganradio.com. Linden, grooving on a Sunday afternoon. We start the program 5 p.m. every Sunday. We're live until 7 p.m. Well, then we're live after that. We just go off the air. You can join us today if you'd like to call on the listener line. It's 855-666-4261. We were going to talk to Bill Sabo, who is with Nature's Flavors and Select Brands, will be drinking his coffee and his tea at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, which is March 20, 21, and 22 of 2015. And you can register for that right now at worldvegansummit.com. Bill is in Saigon, and I'm just not able to connect today. So hopefully within the next week or two, we'll have Bill on to talk about all his wonderful products from Nature's Flavors, what products you could be using this holiday season to make meals very special. All of the products from Nature's Flavors are vegan. You can go to naturesflavors.com, and Birdie and Bill sodas and baking mixes, such as Select. Get if you want to do vegan, gluten-free, sugar-free chocolate brownies, they have them too, and they're available at Viva La Vegan Grocery, Viva La Vegan Grocery, the largest vegan grocery store in the world. It's in Rancho Cucamonga. And there's also a Viva La Vegan in Santa Monica, and which is just, you know, really basically blocks from where we're going to have our World Vegan Summit and Expo March 2021 and 22. I invite you to go to worldvegansummit.com just to see, I mean, the amazing guests who will be there. And I know we have to update the site, and there are many more people who will be joining us on a broad range of topics. You know, we're going to be eating many veganic foods there. Many veganic foods will be grown for us. Veganic, really setting the bar above organic in the agriculture process, eliminating all the products that still can be used in organic, such as, you know, blood, bones, manure. And so we'll be having lots of veganic food, and the sample menu is at the website. So, you know, we'll be looking at everything from veganic agriculture to the hypocrisy of religion, and everything in between, everything related to veganism. Professor Gary Francione will offer his introduction and definition of the abolitionist approach, and he'll be leading two grassroots vegan workshop activists workshops. Activist workshops, one Saturday, one Sunday. And again, you can register right now at worldvegansummit.com, worldvegansummit.com. And we hope to see you there. The meals are included, and you'll see Saturday night, if you get the green ticket, you'll be enjoying Soul Food for Thought, which is our vegan outreach for people of color. We'll have Dr. Antenna Roba there from Ethiopia with a really dramatic presentation. I mean, he's been a Houston emergency room physician for years and sees the impact of the African-American diet on the health of African-Americans here. And then he goes home to Ethiopia, and then he sees the impact of the African-American diet on the environment in Ethiopia. And he also visited the slave dungeons in Africa, and just can't help but make the comparison with the slaughterhouses and animal facilities, the animal agriculture facilities here. We will also have a presentation at Soul Food for Thought at the World Vegan Summit and Expo from Dr. Milton Mills, who talks about more traditional African diets than what's considered, you know, the traditional, you know, the current African-American diet here. He calls what's being eaten here actually slave food and plantation food. And it's interesting, we're going to talk a bit about McDonald's next hour. It's interesting, yesterday I was in a store, and I usually have something on, a hat or a t-shirt that says Go Vegan, and the gentleman there says to me, I'll tell you what he said after the break. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. Programs are archived there. You can donate, and you can also join us by registering now at WorldVeganSummit.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter, at GoVeganRadio. Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. There is a Facebook events page and cause page, I think, also for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And please do visit WorldVeganSummit.com. and register for the event of a lifetime. It's the holiday season. It's a great gift idea, especially if you have any college students on your shopping list. A registration for the World Vegan Summit and Expo would be an amazing gift. It's their world, you know, and we're destroying it. And we know we're destroying it. We just want to ignore those facts because, you know, cheese tastes good. And, I mean, you go back to June 2nd, 2010, and at the Guardian newspaper, even there, June 2nd, my mother's birthday. So it says in the Guardian, a global shift toward a vegan diet. Oh, wait a second, Daisy's deciding to tangle up in the wires here. Daisy, here, sit down, baby. Beautiful little rescue chihuahua, love of my life. So it says in The Guardian, way back in June 2nd, 2010, a global shift toward a vegan diet is vital to save the world from hunger, fuel poverty, and the worst impacts of climate change, a UN report said today. Why is it that The Guardian is willing to use the word vegan, which is, you know, like most descriptive of what it is, instead of confusing issues, you know, like with plant-based. So it says here, as the global population surges toward a predicted 9.1 billion people by 2050, Western tastes for diets rich in meat and dairy products are unsustainable, says the report from the United Nations Environment Program. Program's International Panel of Sustainable Resource Management. It says, impacts from agriculture are expected to increase substantially due to population growth increasing. I didn't tell you about what we were talking about regarding McDonald's yesterday. Okay, well, we'll do a whole section on McDonald's next hour. So it says impacts from agriculture are expected to increase substantially due to population growth, increase in consumption of animal products. Unlike fossil fuels, it is difficult to look for alternatives. As you know, I just mentioned that would take at least 20 years and $35 trillion, right? But it says here, people have to eat. A substantial reduction of impacts would only be possible with a substantial worldwide diet change away from animal products. Now, even since this report came out years back, we heard from those World Watch client specialists who tell us now that we need a 50 to 85% shift from consumption of so-called animal products to vegan products, and we need that to happen by 2020, or it will be too late to affect the melting of polar ice, and then 1,700 cities around the U.S. are under the threat of submersion. So we need this vegan shift to happen, you know, immediately. This should be like front page every day, shouldn't it? So again, it says in The Guardian, Professor Edgar Hurwitz, the lead author of the report, said animal products cause more damage than construction minerals such as sand or cement, plastics or metals. Biomass and crops for animals are as damaging as burning fossil fuel. The recommendation follows advice last year that it says vegetarian diet, but we know we need a vegan diet. If vegetarian means including animal products like dairy, when cows are producing methane, that's up to 100 times worse than carbon. So, you know, when we need, you know, the shift to a vegan diet. That was a report from Lord Nicholas Stern, former advisor to the Labour government on the economics of climate change. Dr. Rajendra Pachauri, chair of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, has also urged people to observe one meat-free day a week to curb carbon emissions. Well, as we know, that's not going to do it. That's not a high enough percentage. I mean, that's a a start. One day a week is a start, and then the other 6 days are a necessity too. I mean, imagine if one day a week were to have an effect, imagine what the effect of 7 days a week would be. I mean, is your addiction that strong to where you're not willing to save the planet? You know, it's like, oh, you know, I mean, I have to have my Big Mac. So here it says, the panel of experts ranked products. The panel of experts ranked products, resources, economic activities, and transport according to their environmental impacts. Agriculture was on a par with fossil fuel consumption because both are rapid, with increased economic growth, they said. Ernst von Weizsäcker, an environmental scientist who co-chaired the panel, said, rising affluence is triggering a shift in diets toward meat and dairy products. Livestock now consumes much of the world's crops and, by inference, a great deal of fresh water, fertilizers, and pesticides. So, not so good getting rich. You know, like, let's be moderate. Everything in moderation, including wealth, which is impacting badly. It says here, both energy and agriculture need to be decoupled from economic growth because environmental impacts rise roughly 80% with a doubling of income, the report found. Wow. You'll be doing the bosses, you do the environment a favor. When your employees ask for a raise, don't give it to them. Tell them, you know, you're saving the environment. Believe that? Environmental impacts rise roughly 80% with a doubling of income. Achim Steiner, the UN Undersecretary General and Executive Director of the UNEP, said, decoupling growth from environmental degradation is the number one challenge facing governments in a world of rising numbers of people, rising incomes, rising consumption demands, and the persistent challenge of poverty alleviation. The panel, which drew on numerous studies, including the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment, cites the following pressures on the environment as priorities for governments around the world: climate change, habitat change, wasteful use of nitrogen and phosphorus in fertilizers, overexploitation of fisheries, forests, and other resources, invasive species, unsafe drinking water and sanitation, lead exposure, urban air pollution, and occupational exposure to particulate matter. Well, doesn't that just sound like animal agriculture to me? It says here, agriculture, particularly meat and dairy products, accounts for 70% of global freshwater consumption, 38% of the total land use, and 19% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. This is from the UN report. You remember the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, which is a pro-meat organization. That's the one that did underestimated the total greenhouse gas effects of animal agriculture. I see in this report it quotes 19%. That report quoted 18%, and 18% is actually higher than all transportation combined. So when the pro meat UN Food and Agriculture Organization told us that animal agriculture is responsible for 18% of all greenhouse gas emissions, it was admitting that that is greater than all transportation combined. And then when World Bank climate specialists examined that FAO report and see all of the shortcomings and what was omitted, and was so many facts were substantially omitted, it turns out that it's actually at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. However, going back to that old article that so many people could have read by now, including Bill McKibben and Amy Goodman, it says, last year, the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization said that food production would have to increase globally by 70% by 2050 to feed the world's surging population. The panel says that efficiency gains in agriculture will be overwhelmed by the expected population growth. So, we can't afford the cost of animal agriculture now. Do we have a second planet? Really, this is making no sense. Professor Hurtwitsch, who is also the director of the Industrial Ecology Program at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, said that developing countries, where much of this population growth will take place, must not follow the Western world's pattern of increasing consumption. Developing countries should not follow our model. Just do as we say, not as we do, okay? Especially, keep McDonald's out of your countries, keep KFC out. He said, but it's up to us to develop the technologies. All of these people are lost in the solution that it's renewable energy that's the answer, and that is absolutely not the case. So, there you have it. If you want to impress your friends at parties with real information about climate change and what's important, animal agriculture is responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. And the only way that we can save the planet from climate change in time to prevent catastrophe is a worldwide shift to going vegan. And so is it really worth our time now to seek divestiture or spend our time opposing the XL pipeline when the political influences are sure to make that happen? And what are we going to do? We just need a massive movement to go vegan, not depend on governments and weird schemes. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. And you can support the program with a donation. You can click donate at goveganradio.com. And register for the World Vegan Summit and Expo at worldvegansummit.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. And on Twitter, it's at Go Vegan Radio, and Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Please do join us at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, March 20th through the 22nd at the Marina del Rey Marriott. We will gather there and strategize, and from there, take off and just help the world go vegan, which it really needs. Really does. Look at what people are eating. The other day I was, in my spare time, what I tell myself is spare time, I wind up watching documentaries, and I don't know, after so many documentaries on UFOs and World War II and 9/11, I look around, there was actually a documentary on stupidity. And people know it's rampant. They know it's rampant in the media. It's interesting that there would be a documentary on stupidity and what the least common denominator is. And it raised the question, which I thought was very bright for stupidity. It asked if, the President of the United States is actually the least common denominator. It certainly makes sense to me. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Means nothing. I tend to think that this diet, this rampant diet of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs is really a diet of stupidity. I mean, it really, it's just so stupid to be eating animal bodies and animal secretions. I mean, it hurts the animals. It makes us sick. It destroys the environment. But humans are not showing very smart behavior quite often, is the case. All you have to do is look at Arby's. Arby's fast food chain is, as the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine tells us, is it's hoping its We Have the Meats campaign and secret menu Meat Mountain will lure in more millennials. Its customers, Arby's customers, are the oldest in the fast food industry. And remember, I don't know, they don't have to be that old because people do die of premature death quite frequently from consumption of animal products. We talk about those studies all the time on this program. It says here, secret menus are used to make people feel like they are trendsetters, but millennials, who are nearly three times more likely than previous generations to be vegan, are unlikely to be taken in by the marketing ploy. Neither should any generation concerned about its health, it says here. So, the Arby's Meat Mountain, which includes 8 cholesterol-loaded meats and 2 fatty cheeses, is kept off the official menu, which conveniently creates a loophole that allows the company to bypass the fast food requirement to post nutritional information. By making the Meat Mountain a secret menu item, Arby's gets to serve customers even unhealthier foods than usual, and it faces no consequences in doing so. Arby's says it created Meat Mountain ads to display all of its available meat products, but then customers started requesting the sandwich. And a reporter with Slate could not find any evidence showing consumer demand for the sandwich. However, Arby's was quick to promote the Meat Mountain. The Slate story asserts that Arby's contacted at least one reporter at the Washington Post, presenting the Meat Mountain as a news story. Arby's also sent an official recipe for the Meat Mountain to its restaurants and added a button to cash registers to make the $10 transaction easier. There you have it. Arby's, serving unhealthy products and getting around the law doing it. Let's go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Up next hour, Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione. We will continue. You can support the program with a tax-deductible donation by clicking Donate at GoVeganRadio.com.
Outside the hole, inside sit the butterflies for the butterfly bowl. All the boys are graded now. They come in their white socks, flat tops, and somehow they find a place. All the boys are winning now. They play all the tricks with smiles and a sorry past for poor. Their own room and winter trees never touched these girls before. They hear the car stereo and they know what life is for. All the boys are weary now. Listen to the family sing song. Family say so. Must carve, must carve, poor cow. Slice her up, slice her up, slice her up, poor cow. Slice her up, slice her up, poor cow. Yep.
Slice her up, poor cow. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, a song I used to play in my music radio days from Tanita Tikaram, a song called Poor Cow. That's the question I would ask of McDonald's. You know, McDonald's has this campaign, Our Food, Your Questions. Hey, McDonald's, how about the poor cow? How about how many cows have you sliced? You know, how many cows have you killed to profit? McDonald's, oh, and welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Glad you can join us. We're live 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Sundays. You can click listen live at goveganradio.com also. And yesterday, I was at a store, had, you know, Go Vegan cap on, vegan shirt. You know, it's like my favorite subject, my favorite word, my favorite words. And the guy said to me, "All right, go vegan." So I said, "Well, I mean, I already did. I did 30 years ago." And he said, "Wow, that's so great, 30 years ago." So I said, "Well, you know, are you vegan yet?" And he said, "Well, you know, not really, man. I'm like, you know, I'm a father, you know, and I have kids. And I don't want to say no to the kids. You know, they want to go to McDonald's. I have to take the kids to McDonald's." And I said, "Well, you're the father. Aren't you supposed to protect the kids from harm? I mean, you know, some years from now, the kids can turn around and say, 'Dad, you had a chance to help us, you know, prevent diabetes and heart disease and cancer. And, you know, come on, Dad. Why didn't you look out for us? Why didn't you protect us? What about it, Dad? You know, you're going to let the kids tell you what to do and, you know, feed them that poison." And by the way, when you think about poison, I mean, chickens are fed arsenic and stays in chicken flesh. So I don't know, which is more poison, the intended poison or the added poison? McDonald's, though, is trying to tell you that the intended poison is pure. You know, it's flesh and animal secretions are pure products. And so I thought maybe we would listen to their explanations. You know, there are a couple of these Our Food, Your Questions, and there have been some people asking McDonald's questions, and I thought maybe we'd see, you know, the propaganda that McDonald's is putting out there, you know, as if to really be answering, you know, the serious questions about its food. So let's check this one out about the McRib. If McDonald's wanted to be honest, it would be saying diarrhea fed McRibs, since they're made of pig, and you know that there's a pig virus going around, where in order to address the pig virus, a diarrhea, you know, there's a diarrhea epidemic, and the pigs are fed. They're fed diarrhea and dead pigs. You know, so the survivors, the ones who become the McRib, you know, it's a selling point. You know, like grass fed beef, diarrhea fed McRib, diarrhea fed pork. Here's McDonald's sales pitch.
"My name is Wes Bellamy. I'm from Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm a teacher at Albemarle High School. I'm also the executive director of a nonprofit entitled Hype, helping young people evolve.
Right now, I'm in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, a place I've never been before. And McDonald's brought me here because of a tweet that they saw. Someone sent me a picture of what I thought was a McRib, and I put wow with a bunch of O's and W's, and that looked disgusting. And I was encouraging everyone to never eat anything from McDonald's again. So I think you all want to bring me here so that I can actually see how the McRib is made and see if my mind can be changed a little bit. I don't know, though. I'm a skeptic."
You're a skeptic.
"I'm Grant Imahara. McDonald's knows you have a lot of questions about their food, so they've asked me to help you find the answers."
"Hey, are you Wes?"
"I'm Wes. Are you Grant?"
"I am Grant.
Nice to meet you, man.
Are you ready to get to the bottom of the McRib?
Let's find out what's really in that stuff."
All right. Grant.
"Wes Bellamy.
Kevin Hankey, nice to meet
Pleasure.
You.
Pleasure. What do we have here?"
"We have a boneless pork picnic." "Okay." "Which is the main ingredient in the McDonald's McRib patty."
"This looks a lot different from a picture that I saw on Twitter. So this is the good stuff."
"This is what we purchase and bring in the facility to create the McRib."
"Well, I'm anxious to see what happens next."
"Yeah.
Very good. All right, cool.
Check it out.
So where are we headed now?"
"So we're going to head and watch
pork be introduced into the process. Come on up.
All right.
This is the same cut of meat that we saw up in the kitchen earlier.
Have you ever seen this much meat before?
It looks like a concentration camp.
No bones. No gristle.
Concentration camp.
Meat.
I don't know. Let me feel one of the pieces
in the
back.
Look at all those body parts.
They try to hide the stuff in the back. Let me try to get one of these pieces. Let me get at the bottom, one of these pieces. There's nothing in it. Hey, this is good. So this will be lifted up and go up there to get grinded?
Just go take a look at that process.
Okay.
Everybody's smiling over the murder victims there. The diarrhea.
We're going to come on this vantage point so we can see the entire production floor.
Okay.
This is a great vantage point to survey your meat empire.
Oh, is that gross.
Every piece of meat that we're grinding and putting into the McRib process is visually inspected by highly trained individuals.
This is pretty cool, I must admit. This is not like I thought it would be.
So, Kevin, I see there's a lot of things being
ground
mixed in there.
Ground up body, corpse, cadaver.
Pouring in the McRib patty is pork, water, salt, dextrose, which is a type of sugar, and preservatives, which are BHA, propyl gallate, and citric acid.
What are the preservatives for?
The preservatives are used to lock in the flavor all the way until the restaurant.
Oh, so that's how you keep it tasting like my grandma's barbecue.
We're following a recipe just like she does at home.
All right, let's see.
All right.
Wes, your grandma makes a McRib? Because if so, I want to taste that.
So after this is mixed, we're going to form it into that McRib shape. You turn around behind you, you will see where we're forming McRib in the iconic form that resembles a rack of ribs.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I never knew. I just thought it was some weird shape.
We're putting a really fine mist of water on the product so because when we flash freeze, keep it from dehydrating. Should we take a look and see what it looks like coming out of the freezer and being put in a box?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Wes, is this what you saw in that tweet?
Yeah, I think it is. But you know what? It's kind of crazy because it's different. Now that I know what actually goes inside of it and I know what the process is in terms of making it, it's actually good pork.
Yeah, we knew you could be
brainwashed. So, in
Guy Cooks,
we want to make sure
good
we are
pork.
Preparing the product just like
as
it's being cooked in the restaurant.
As if there could be good pork.
So, we're cooking it the exact same way.
Okay.
So that this would be the exact same experience.
The exact same experience in the restaurant.
How many McRibs do you eat in a day?
A lot.
I love how they use the word experience.
Now's the time to see exactly what's going to happen.
Right. It's a moment of truth.
Yeah. Well, that looks a lot different from the picture that
and
I saw.
The worker here eats
so
McRibs
actually,
every day.
When we evaluate it, we look at the sear on top side and bottom side.
We'll see her in intensive care soon.
Great texture.
So I've never eaten a McRib.
What an occupational hazard.
Either.
Yeah.
Want to go have the opportunity to make your own sandwich and taste it as a complete build?
Yeah, let's do it.
After we toast the roll, we're going to add the McRib patty that's been marinating in the barbecue sauce.
Is that just like they have it at
just like in the restaurant?
Yeah, I'm a pickle man.
Ready?
All right, let's do it.
The pickle is the safest thing you can eat there. Are you kidding me?
Only thing is just a lot.
It's a lot messier.
What
than
a surprise!
A lot
the guy
of the
is able
things.
To be brainwashed by
that's
the sandwich.
I like my barbecue.
Who would have expected this outcome?
I guess that's how it should be. Right?
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have to make another one of these. I'm going to finish mine pretty soon. All of my questions have been answered. The sandwich is pretty good, man. It's actually really good.
You know what we are now?
Okay. What are we?
We're McRib buddies. I know you got questions.
That's funny.
Send them in, and I'll find the answers.
That's very funny. Thank you, high school teacher there with an organization called Helping Young People Evolve. And... really, if you wanted to help them evolve, he'd help them go vegan. But, what an unexpected outcome to that video that his mind would be changed and he'd actually endorse the diarrhea-fed pork. Now, there's another one. Is McDonald's beef real? Can we check that one out? Let's see what that is. Oh. Let's see. We wouldn't have enough time to finish that one. So, let's see. How much time would we have to play for that, though? Let's see. Okay. So we'll have to play that. Can we fit it in the next segment, John? Will it fit in? I'm trying to see. Okay. All right. So we will play that one in the next segment and. More of this about McDonald's, with the Our Food your questions. My questions are like, you know, hey, Ronald McDonald, how many animals, or hey, McDonald's, how many animals had to die for your unhealthy food? McDonald's, how many children have developed diabetes and heart disease and cancer from eating your foods? And hey, McDonald's, isn't it really child abuse for you to target your advertising at children so they would eat such unhealthy products that, you know, will destroy the environment? So instead of going to McDonald's, I say, support your local vegan restaurant. Those are the true heroes. These are the people who are really doing the good work. In fact, at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, we will have discussions of supporting vegan businesses, why it's important to do just that. And locally, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, I suggest that you support Vegetarian House, which is a 100% vegan restaurant at 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose. The website is vegetarianhouse.us. It caters, so it can make your next business or social event or your wedding very special. Check out Vegetarian House for catering, vegetarianhouse.us. We will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo at worldvegansummit.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. So we're listening to McDonald's propaganda. It's our food, your questions. Here's another. Is McDonald's beef real?
Are there lips and eyeballs in there, Jimmy? At what point in the process do we inject the pink slime? Hey, can I have this to go?
I'm Granny Mahara. McDonald's knows you have a lot of questions about their food, so they've asked me to help you find the answers. I'm in Fresno, California, where I'm going to show you if McDonald's beef is real.
Which way to the meat?
All right, so we're here. Cargill's right behind me. I really don't know what to expect in there. Let's go find out. Hey, Raquette.
Hi, Grant. Great to see you again. Welcome to Cargill. We're really excited to tell you all about McDonald's beef today.
All right. I'm eager to see some meat. Never thought I'd say that.
Pretty
this
psychotic.
This is the meat
plant.
Jimmy?
Hey,
Grant.
How's it going, Jimmy?
Good. Welcome to Friends of Grind. Pleasure to have you here.
I got a lot of questions for you.
Outstanding.
Are there lips and eyeballs in there, Jimmy?
No, it's 100% beef trimmings from the cow. When we go to the tour, you got to be pretty impressed by the quality of beef that we have on
there. All right, let's do it.
Any mad cow disease in there, Jimmy? Any mad cow?
Trimmings. I mean, these are huge chunks.
Some nice chunks, yes.
Huge chunks of body parts.
Hey, can I have this to go?
I wish we could do that, but unfortunately not.
So you don't
use any of that stuff. Yes, I am a cadaver eater.
What's it called? Lean?
Lean, finely textured beef, or so-called pink slime. We don't use that in our burgers.
There's no giant machine that... and then puts it right in the mix.
Not at all.
So the next step is to start the grinding. Product is loaded into our grinder here, and then they hand it over to a formulator, and they want to check this product to ensure that everything is quality all the way through, right?
That ground beef is automatically fed into our patty formers and simply form our patty.
So you don't pour in any wood pulp or other kinds of meat.
Too bad, that would be healthier.
Beef out. Nothing else is added.
Real simple.
The wood pulp would be healthier than what's in there.
After this.
Want to come around here? Well, now we get to look at our flat freezer.
Wow. And so they start out just off the line, and when they get to the top, they're completely frozen.
Exactly. Well, and that is to ensure that we lock in the flavors. This is the patties coming out of the spiral freezer. From there, we're simply putting them in a box.
So how about we go taste some meat?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
How's it going?
Good. Daredevil.
All right, so what do you do here?
Well, what we're doing here is we're replicating pretty much exactly what they do in the McDonald's restaurants, so we know what the consumer is going to be getting in the end product.
So your job is to eat hamburgers every day of the week?
Yep.
Pretty exciting. You're living the dream.
See you in intensive care, brother.
Yeah, pop right up.
Hey. Occupational hazard, right. Heart
Take
disease.
Off the way we put them on.
It looks like a burger.
There you go. Cheers.
Cheers.
There's nothing cheerful about the murder victim on a bun.
The only thing that we don't have here, though, is we don't have lettuce and tomatoes because we have to test the product exactly the way that we do it here. But if you want to try the real product, we can go to McDonald's.
Nah, that's not necessary. Okay, so I guess we can fade out of this, John. It's hard to take. I'd rather not go to McDonald's. I see. So that's Cargill. I'm trying to remember. Wasn't Cargill with the 36 million pound recall for salmonella? In 2011? And then I look at Food Safety News. This is Cargill. Providing the pure ingredients to McDonald's here. Food Safety News. Cargill has a history of meat recalls. It says Cargill's massive recall of ground turkey products last week. And again, that was that recall from a few years ago. Says was not the first time the industry giant had to call back potentially contaminated meat from the marketplace. Oh, there's a whole list of it. I mean, going back from 1993, Cargill supplied meat to Northwest Sizzler restaurants that was implicated in an outbreak of E. coli and led to many illnesses. 2000, Cargill provided meat to Sizzler restaurants linked to another E. coli outbreak that killed and sickened, okay, humans. Sliced turkey from a Cargill processing plant in Texas was found to be the source of a multi-state outbreak of listeria. Okay, I'm feeling really good for McDonald's propaganda here on the purity of Cargill meat. 2001, Cargill ground beef patties tested positive for E. coli. That means there's poop, so they're not putting eyeballs, but they can't get the poop off. Maybe I'll just finish up this list after the break. We have Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione coming up, and please register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Our food will be much better than Cargill's. Go to worldvegansummit.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at GoVeganRadio. Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. There are some Bob Linden pages there, too. Finishing up from before the break there, when we played the McDonald's Our Food, Your Questions, and when they were saying, when do the eyeballs go into the food? When does the pink slime go in? Just remember, McDonald's cannot keep the poop out of its food. And we were talking about, Cargill. They were telling us Cargill is so pure. There have been so many Cargill recalls, 2002, salmonella, 2.8 million pounds recall then. And then E. coli in 2007, 845,000 pounds. 2007, again, Cargill, 1,084,000 pounds of ground beef with E. coli. I mean, they just really, they can't keep the poop out of it. Maybe they can keep some of the eyeballs out, certainly Cargill has been involved with many, many recalls. So not the pure food they're making it out to be. Totally gross. If you're totally grossed out by, what McDonald's is doing there with that, you have no excuse. You can go vegan, and you can have food delivered right to your door by Greenlight Meals. Wherever you are in the U.S., to your home, to your office, greenlitemeals.com. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, desserts, snacks, smoothies, Foods for the Kids. Also, weight loss and nutritional consultation is available from Melissa Bray. So get in touch with Greenlight Meals, greenlitemeals.com, who will have a table at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. You can say hi to them there, and you can register right now at worldvegansummit.com, where you'll meet Professor Gary Francione conducting his introduction to the abolitionist approach and a couple of major grassroots vegan activist workshops happening there. And how are you today, Professor Francione?
I'm just peachy, Bob. I'm wonderful. How are you doing?
Peachy is good for a vegan, right? A delicious fruit.
Yes, yes. It is. Yeah. You know, this week I thought I would talk about something that is, you know, the holiday season's coming up, and it's just a matter of time before you're going to start getting bombarded. It's probably actually already happening that people are getting bombarded with the year-end, give us a tax-deductible contribution, help us save the animals from all of these large corporate charities that are taking in a lot of money and doing nothing more than promoting happy exploitation. And I think it's important that people not, you know, there's a natural inclination. You know, everybody feels they should be doing more for animals, so you get these mailings, these solicitations for money, help us. You know, help. You know, you can be an activist. Write a check, which is really what it's all about. I mean, it's like reducing activism to making contributions. And there's a tendency. I mean, a lot of people just sort of say, "Well, you know, I want to do something to help, so this is something I can do to help." And it's not an answer. What you're doing by contributing money to these organizations is promoting happy exploitation. You're actually being part. You're actually participating in the problem. You're part of the problem. You're funding the animal rights movement. Unfortunately, I know the animal rights movement has nothing to do with rights, but the animal movement in this country has become a partner with institutional exploiters, and unfortunately, that's just across the board. I mean, all of the large corporate charities, in one form or another, engage in a partnership with the institutional exploiters, and it's appalling. I mean, it doesn't really matter whether it's PETA, HSUS, Compassion Over Killing, Mercy for Animals, Farm Sanctuary, all of these groups, you know, all of them are involved in partnerships with institutional exploiters. And so, you know, giving money to these groups is, I think, not only not going to do anything to help animals, I think it positively harms animals. So what can people do? Well, to the extent that, you know, I always think the best thing to do is, you know, forget about the money. Put your heart and your labor into something, you know, go to the shelter and socialize animals. This is a big problem. You know, animals that are sitting in shelters for long periods of time, they become difficult to adopt because they're psychologically stressed in the shelter, and you know they become somewhat unsocialized and in some cases very unsocialized. And it would be great if people could spend some time at the local shelter, you know, working with animals, just spending some time petting them, taking them out, interacting with them, and things like that. That is invaluable. I mean, you can, whatever money you give, that's invaluable because you're saving lives. You're helping these dogs, cats, and other animals remain or regain being socialized so that they can be adopted, and that's really super important. So you know, it's that sort of thing, there are always people in our communities who are in the hospital. You know, something happens, they break their leg, or they get ill, or something happens, and they've got nobody to take care of their companion animals. So take care of their companion animals. I mean, you know, those sorts of things, so that those animals don't end up in shelters. So you know, take care of those animals while a neighbor is in an infirm situation. You know, there are all sorts of things that you know that you can do to be helpful. But if what you want to do is to give money, what I would recommend doing, you know, I'm actually going to think more about this and talk more about it over the coming weeks about projects and things that people can do. But just off the top of my head, Bob, it would seem to me that, you know, if you want to contribute some money, contribute some money to getting toys for the shelter. I mean, you know, shelters always need toys. They always need beds. That's something that they always need. You know, that's something that we've done over the years. You know,
or vegan food.
Absolutely, vegan food. Provide vegan. I mean, these are hard economic times. And, you know, people who work in shelters will tell you that a lot of people are turning in their animals because they can't afford to keep them anymore. I mean, these really are terrible times. A lot of people are losing their jobs. These are not good times. And a lot of people are turning their animals in because they can't afford to keep them. They can't afford to buy food. And so, you know, how about getting some vegan food for, you know, for people who need that, you know, who need some help, you know? Talk to your local veterinarian and ask whether or not there's somebody who's got an emergency situation and hasn't been able to get some sort of veterinary care because they don't have the money and pay for it, you know? As long as you trust your veterinarian, and they're not going to basically just use you to pay for other people's veterinary bills. But you know, I remember a couple of years ago, a veterinarian friend of ours was telling us about somebody who had a cat who needed some procedure that was not within that person's financial ability. It was a couple hundred dollars, and you know, we found out about this, and you know, we paid for the cat's operation, which the person couldn't pay for. And so that sort of stuff, I mean, you know, that's money well spent, because you're actually saving lives. And you know, you're keeping people, human and non, with their relationships, and it's really very, very important. And I think that, you know, we've just got to get away from this idea that activism is writing a check to one of the large organizations. You know, I mean, there are people out there like Bob Linden of Go Vegan Radio who are doing really excellent work, and deserve support from people because they haven't sold out, and indeed they suffer because they haven't sold out, and they haven't decided to. I'm sure, Bob, that life would be a lot easier for you if you decided that Go Vegan Radio was going to start featuring all of these large organizations. You'd probably be on one of the national stations every night. You'd have your own show on CNN. But because you don't do that, you know, you are at a disadvantage. You don't get
the support. So my appeal, I'm sending out an appeal to people to send money so I can buy stamps to send out an appeal. You know what I mean?
Well, there you go. There you go. So you know, yeah, I mean, there are people like you who are doing advocacy work that is of a different type from what these large organizations do, both substantively and structurally, and you know, and could use the support. But I also think that, you know, people who want, really, these large organizations are bringing in, they're bringing in millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. I mean, you know, you've got HSUS that brings in what, about $125 million a year,
right? None of which will really go toward promoting veganism, right? You know, so it's like
no,
you
know, Bob, it won't go to promoting veganism.
But I mean, that's like stealing all the money.
It'll go to farmer outreach programs. It will go to promoting happy exploitation. You know, you've got PETA bringing in what, you know, I mean, in the tens of millions of dollars. You've got all these the problem with these organizations is not money. It never has been, actually. Never has been. Problem is not money. The problem is failure of vision. And the desire, basically, to sort of keep the donor pool as large as possible by basically, you know, being all things to everybody and standing for nothing. And so, you know, giving money to these organizations is not only not going to help animals, I think it's positively counterproductive. I mean, I really do. I think it's just gotten to the point now. These organizations are so out of control. You know, they really are. They are just completely out of control. And I was thinking with some friends that, you know, we've known for a long time about how things have, you know, in certain ways, what's going on right now was going on in the 1990s in terms of organizations selling out and forming partnerships with institutional employers. But it's gotten now so... It's ubiquitous. It's pervasive. It's across the board. Everyone's doing it, and they're doing it. It's become not an exception to their organization in terms of, like, you know, they've got a decent program, but they've got a few aspects of their program which are problematic. It's now their entire, I mean, the entire campaign strategy of many of these organizations involves focusing on happy exploitation and animal welfare reform, and so it's really gotten it's out of control. It really is just out.
This is the time of year HSUS is now promoting heritage birds for the holiday. Right? It's not like don't be vegan for Thanksgiving. By heritage birds.
I got an email the other day because, you know, I'm on all these lists, and I got an email from the Global Animal Partnership. And our friend Wayne Pussell sits on the board of directors of that organization, along with John Mackey and other people. And that is the organization that formulates the standards that Whole Foods uses to promote, you know, this is the animal, the five-step animal.
Hold that thought. We have the music happening, meaning we're taking a break. Hey, register for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Go to worldvegansummit.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio and Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And yes, you can make a tax-deductible donation to support whatever it is we do here, but you know it will be, you know, for the vegan cause and definitely not the promotion of humane meat. You can click donate at GoVeganRadio.com. And before the break, we were talking to Professor Gary Francione, who was telling us you got an email regarding the Global Animal Partnership, the humane oppression.
Yes, indeed. I got an email from the Global Animal Partnership telling me all about some guy who raises turkeys and how much he loves them and things like that. And fun facts. There was a section about fun facts about how, you know, turkeys used to be herded to the slaughterhouse. Now they get driven there. And so, I mean, it's just, it was, to call it obscene is an insult to obscene things. It was really just horrible. And you know, it's appalling that Wayne Pussell sits on the board of that organization, and that all of these groups, including HSUS, PETA, Mercy for Animals, Compassion Over Killing, Farm Sanctuary, Vegan Outreach, all of these groups, Viva USA, all of these groups signed that love letter that our father of the animal rights movement, Peter Singer, sent in 2005, which inaugurated this phase of the happy exploitation movement, expressing their appreciation and support. You know, that's a quote to John Mackey for his, quote, pioneering, end quote, program of happy exploitation. And so, you know, it's just appalling when I see this, you know, this Global Animal Partnership, and I posted it on the, you know, the Facebook page that I have, Gary Francione on the abolitionist approach to animal rights, and I posted it, and people were just really furious at, you know, the guy who raises the turkeys, and they were upset with the Global Animal Partnership. But what they're not seeing is the reason that this thing has, the reason why this organization and what it's doing is as influential as it is because it's got the support of the animal movement. I mean, they're doing this stuff. They're promoting these, you know, this stuff with the explicit endorsement of the animal movement. I mean, look, the animal movement's been supporting animal welfare reform for a long time. But in 2005, when Singer sent that letter to Mackey, and, you know, I mean, that was a public letter in which all of the large U.S. animal organizations openly embraced the concept of humane or happy exploitation. And so this nonsense, when I hear these groups say, oh, we don't support happy exploitation, we call that a lie. Yes, you do. When you send a letter, a public letter, saying we express our appreciation and support for those standards, You are supporting
to Whole Foods and the Global Animal Partnership. This week, I saw the wrapping that goes on the dead animals, the so-called meat products. There, it has Global Animal Partnership on the wrapping. It also says thanks for caring about animals.
Yes, Bob. I've actually written about this, and last week I posted some artwork that someone's done that one of the people on my page has done using that paper. It's obscene, but you know, look, Whole Foods is a company, it's a corporation. They're supposed to maximize the value for their shareholders. So I think what they're doing is insidious, but what they're doing is they're maximizing the value of the company, of the company's assets for shareholders. You can't really blame Whole Foods.
Yeah. But we don't have to do that. Right. We don't have to do that.
Behind Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. And that's why people should not be contributing to these organizations this Christmas. If you want to help animals, that's the last thing you want to do. Is to contribute money to these organizations. What you want to do is help animals. So fine, help animals. So, you know, get some beds for the shelter. You know, get some toys for the animals in the shelter. Help people with veterinary care. Provide vegan food. You know, there are lots of people. This is something that a number of us do, you know, is get vegan food for people who don't have the money to feed their companion animals. Right now, in 2014, lots of people are having difficulty feeding their family, including the non-human members of the family. So help them out. Get them some vegan, get them some Evolution. Get them a 40-pound bag of Evolution kibble or something like that, and so that they can feed their non-human animals. So if you want it, this holiday season, you know, if you want to contribute money, there are lots of things you can do, short of writing a check to one of these organizations.
Or buy somebody a registration to the World Vegan Summit and Expo.
World Vegan Summit coming up in March. Let's talk about that next week.
WorldVeganSummit.com. Register now. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.